Brian Windhorst and the Hoop Collective is presented by YouTube TV. Try it free today at youtube.com/NBA23. New users only. Terms apply. Cancel anytime. Hello, welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Sunday evening. Joining me from Las Vegas, Nevada. I think it's the 20th Las Vegas Summer League because I think they didn't have one during the pandemic. But whatever it is, it's Tim Bontemps.
Hello. I believe it started in 2004 because I looked this up earlier. Something I was talking about, Victor Wembanyama. So,
no.
Oh, okay.
Close to 20.
Wee.
And from down the street, I don't think they're staying at the same place because they can't stand being in the same building. It's Ban McMahon.
Ban McMahon. I'm the baddest dude in all the land. I got Texas blood.
Wow. This is terrible.
I'm Ban McMahon.
And that.
Howdy, partners. I would listen, a fan loudly requested during a break in play in the Spurs Blazers game tonight that the Ban McMahon theme song returns. So I took matters in my own hand. He also shouted out Bontemps and said, "Hey, Bontemps, keep pissing Windhorst off. I love it."
So that's true statements. Live shows canceled.
These are true statements.
Oh, no, no, no. YouTube comments were very much in favor of the live show.
I didn't see. Is that true?
Yeah.
It is true. There's a lot of comments here in Las Vegas on the ground about excitement about live shows.
On the ground.
There's also careful one that on called Bontemps a plain old rice cake with arrogance, which is interesting.
That one was not shared with me before. That's quite the take.
Oh my God. Oh man. All right. Well, the reason we're doing this so late is we wanted to have these gents, and I watched it too, see Victor Wembanyama play his second. What did they say after the game? This was it.
They said, we will see.
He was asked by our Andrew Lopez what his plans were for the rest of summer league. And he essentially said, "I got to talk to Pop about it." So
that's, we'll see. That's French for this is it.
Yeah. By the way, how about, okay. I can't say that I have a complete history of this type of thing, but teams have begun not announcing contract extensions for coaches or general managers all the time, especially if the coach or general manager is entrenched. They don't want anybody to know when their contracts are coming up. I don't remember the last time Greg Popovich, where it was announced that it with a press release, that he signed a contract extension. I almost want to say I've never seen it in the 20 years I've been covering the NBA, but that's probably not true. But at the very least, it's been longer than my memory goes. And not only that, almost never. It's happened a few times where they will say the amount of years that a coach has in a contract extension, but that is quite rare.
Yeah, 5 years.
Even more rare. They announced in the, it's a 5-year contract extension.
Well, they announced it right. They announced it right in conjunction with Adam Silver's big announcement for his pet project, the in-season tournament, which I am just going to say that I do not believe is a coincidence that they did it at the same time. I'm just going to say that.
The NBA Cup.
Hey, and they also announced it soon after Vic had a really uncomfortable to watch, disappointing summer league debut, which, you know, maybe that's also a way to take a little attention off the fact that he struggled. Just not that they're concerned about it, but like the weight of the world doesn't need to be on a teenage kid's shoulders, and make it clear that, hey, Pop is going to be with Victor Wembanyama through his rookie contract.
Yeah, Pop's contract's longer than Victor's.
$80 million, too, Woj reported, and that is, you know, Monty Williams.
More than $80 million.
Okay, well, Monty Williams reset the market, and then Pop reset it again.
Well, Steve Kerr has 1 year left on his contract, and I don't know if that extension is going to get announced, but I'll bet he was very interested to see his buddy Pop get that come out there. The Spurs never leak or announce data like this, and they did. And that is fascinating on a number of fronts, including anybody who thought Pop was going to coach one more year and hang it up. Yeah. But let me just say, in talking to people from the Spurs organization over the last couple of years, and maybe this was their party line, maybe they knew more than they were allowed to say or whatever. But when I talked to people from the Spurs organization, they would say, we don't think he's leaving, but we don't know.
Yeah.
You know, so now there's a bunch of clarity, and it was in big, bold type in my email inbox, all caps, Greg Popovich signs 5-year contract extension. I was like, okay, wowsy, and then, wowsy.
And then in parenthesis, it says, so stop asking.
Right. Well, the thing about it was at the conclusion of the Olympic gold medal, when he won the gold medal with Team USA in Tokyo, he kind of made some comments that made Mike Finger from the San Antonio Express News, was one of the American reporters over there. And like, you know, it was this, all this relief and satisfaction, and you know, they had struggled. Remember, they lost the first game to France, and they had struggled in the World Cup a couple years prior, and so it was relief more than anything. And he was like, I don't even know how I'm gonna go on and go back and coach the NBA after this. And he came off the podium because it's very tightly controlled, the interviews, and that you're only allowed to ask so many questions. And like, literally Mike Finger and I like ran up to him and we're like, did you just, you're not retired. You're not, you know, like it wasn't clear. Like we were so kind of on edge about it. So anyway, back to Wembanyama. You guys were there tonight. What were the final numbers? 27 points and 12 rebounds. Is that the final number?
27, 12 and 3 blocks, I believe. Let me double check.
That's correct. 9-14 shooting, hit a couple threes and went 7-for-12 from the line.
So certainly much like this is what you expected from him. You know, the other night was just, he was totally out of sync offensively. Now he did, like, you know, he swatted everything in sight except for the lob that Kai Jones threw down over his head. But you know, this is the kind of performance you expected from a guy who we've typed up as the best prospect since LeBron.
Bontemps?
Yeah. I mean, look, when we talked on the pod the other day going into the weekend, I said I wasn't really interested in how he did from a stat standpoint in these games, because I was just looking forward to seeing him play. And I think, to me, the best thing that could have happened to Victor Wembanyama in the Spurs was for him to be terrible in his first game, because there was so much hype and so much buildup and so much attention on him. And he's going to be the greatest prospect of all time. He's going to come in here and dominate right away. And if he'd had the 27-point, 12-rebound game on Friday, that would have only shot up to like 1,000, right? And like McMahon said, it was sort of uncomfortable to watch on Friday. You know, the crowd was sort of like willing him to try to do something. There were some boos throughout the game. Like, everyone was just sort of like, we were supposed to see a show, and the show didn't happen. So now
a lot of murmuring.
Yeah, it was interesting. But then today, you know, you saw him in the second quarter. He blocks his countryman, Ryan Rupert's three-pointer right in front of their agents, sitting there with Victor's father, Felix. And then he goes down.
Great guy.
He is a very nice man. They then went down and, you know, Victor takes a frankly terrible shot. He does his between the legs dribble, his fall away fading shot, like shouldn't have had any chance to go in. But it drops in, and from then on, his confidence shot right up.
Yeah, he got a couple of dunks after that.
And then he was off to the races, and he looked confident again. It was sort of like you could sort of see the pressure of like, oh, hey, I finally got something to go. And then he looked like himself again. And I think those two games, it's probably going to be a lot like what his rookie year is going to be like. There's going to be some games where he looks out of sync and lost and doesn't really know what to do. And, you know, talking to some Spurs people, you know, their guys were still trying to figure out where to play with him on the court and like what the right spacing was. And like, he hadn't really done anything the past few weeks, obviously. So there was some rust to knock off in that first game, but there's going to be moments of brilliance, like we saw for large stretches of the game today. And there's going to be moments where he looks like a fish out of water, like he did for most of the game on Friday. And I think everybody just has to remember he's a 19-year-old kid who is going to need some time to adjust, but obviously has truly immense potential.
Yeah, some time to adjust, some time to mature physically. And I just think need to tone down expectations. Like, if this guy doesn't average 25 points a game next year, it's not a disappointment, right? Like, you know, the comps to Kevin Durant, those might be a little ambitious, but let's also remember teenage Kevin Durant as a rookie averaged 20 points on 43% shooting and 29% from three. It's not like he just, you know, was a 50, 40, 90 guy, you know, right out of the chutes in the NBA. You know, I don't know if Victor, like, I think we might've gotten a little carried away with the idea that, you know, Victor's going to be a guy who you get him the ball, you space the floor, he goes to work. I think, and Bontemps and I were talking about this, I think he's going to be much more of a finisher than a creator. You know, a catch and shoot, a lob guy, attack closeouts, than maybe a guy who does a lot of ISOing, which is fine. Like, you can be that guy and still be a phenomenal scorer. I think that point guard play is going to be absolutely critical to Victor's success with the Spurs. And they brought Trey Jones back. Looks like he'll start this year. And we'll see how that looks moving forward. But again, to expect this guy to come in and look like prime Kevin Durant right off the bat at 7'4", that's asking too much.
Well, the one thing I will say that he brought over from the French League or tried to bring over is that he really wants to put the ball on the floor and create his own shot.
Yep.
He really, really wants to do that. And, you know, you can tell he's worked real hard at that low dribble. He crouches down and crosses over and all that stuff. It's not going to be as easy as it, I mean, not that it was easy ever in the French League, but that's going to take some work. He is. I mean, he does have handles. Like, he's not, you know, he's definitely got it going and he can create his own shot, but the standard in the NBA for what you need to do that is higher than what he's used to.
And you know what? Chet Holmgren's very, very similar in that regard. These are guys at 7'1", 7'4", 3.5", whatever, who have extraordinary handles for their height. But extraordinary handles for your height and being able to, you know, ISO in against team defense in the NBA is too, you know, like, you need more than just extraordinary handles. And, you know, Chet has had, I think it was, it's either 9 or 11 turnovers in three games, including six in one game in Salt Lake City. And, you know, talking, when he talked after his game the other day, he acknowledged, like, he's learning, hey, when can I be aggressive off the dribble? When do I need to move the ball and just, you know, find another way to make a play? And basically, look, driving, those guys can't be driving into traffic. You know, the way Chet put it was, when you're five out and they've got two guys on the elbows, like, that's not the time to try to put the ball on the floor and make the play. And I think both of them in half court, if they don't have a shot after three dribbles, I think they need to move the ball. You know, this 6, 7, 8 dribbles, I don't think that's going to be their game, certainly early in their careers and maybe ever.
Well, and
Kevin Durant, I believe it took him 5 or 6 years before he had more assists than turnovers.
Yeah.
And I know that ball handling with the handle isn't the same as making a pass, but the point is Durant's ball skills took a long time to get to where they needed to be. And by the way, once he developed those ball skills, particularly where he could put the ball on the floor and get to the line, because that's where he went supercharged as a scorer.
Yeah.
Like I said, it took five or six.
I just looked it up. It was his sixth NBA season.
Yeah.
Happened to have his basketball reference page up because I did look up his first
year. Was that the year he won the MVP probably was the year to finish top three of the MVP for the first time? Well, don't worry about looking that up. I'm sorry.
I look like stats and info.
You're certainly right about that. And he's going to obviously get better with that stuff in time. He also is like 5 inches bigger than even Kevin Durant. So we'll see and could even grow more. So we'll see if it's even really something you could feasibly do at that height to dribble around. I think even more than point guard play, I think the biggest thing for the Spurs is going to be figuring out both the kind of players to put around him to make him succeed and how to play with him on the court. Cause he is just such a unique specimen as a player and the different things he can do. It's not as simple as like, oh yeah, you can run certain actions for him. And like I think they really are going to have to create an ecosystem around him that makes the most sense. And I think it is going to take some time to do that. Though some of the young wings they have, like Keldon Johnson and Jeremy Sochan and Devin Vassell, I think are all guys that are pretty good fits early on.
You guys did get to hear, by the way, Sohan gave an interview during the game to Cassidy Hubberth. It was spectacular.
What do you have to say?
Sohan's an interesting guy.
Well, Sohan, I think, is going to become a little bit more known now that the Victor's on his team. Yes. He is a very interesting guy. But he was talking about some of the stuff that Pop does at, you know, mm-hmm. practice and stuff, including he was talking about his technique on defensive slides. So excellent in-game interview. But anyway, I think you're right. You know, the interesting thing I saw, I mean, look, they're barely running any offense. I mean, Summer League is awful, but like they were attempting to get him the ball in space.
Yeah.
Like you would do with a high volume wing player, quite frankly.
Yeah. And he's starting a lot of possessions down in the corner. And then they're running action where he starts in the corner and then, you know, comes up to the wing, that sort of thing. You know, I'm curious exactly how Sohan is going to fit into the Spurs rotation at this point, because they've made it very clear. Victor Wembanyama is not a center. He's listed as a forward, not a forward center.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
So Sohan played all of his minutes at the four, but he is a guy, you know, he can put it on the floor. The big question with him is, can he shoot it? Draymond has been the most common comp that you hear for him. But do they start Zach? If they're starting Zach Collins at center, Vic at the four, are they starting Sohan?
Yeah, I think Sohan's. I think Sohan's coming off the bench. They're going to start Devin Vassell.
They love Devin Vassell. Devin Vassell might be the second most untouchable player on the roster after Victor.
Yeah, Vassell's good and scored 20 some odd a game last year, not extraordinarily efficiently, but
yeah, my guess is their starting five will be Trey Jones, Devin Vassell, Keldon Johnson, Vic, and either Zach Collins, or if they get another center, that guy at center would be my guess. And Sohan will come off the bench.
It would be kind of fitting to have Sohan come off the bench, because Pop has compared his competitive spirit to Manu Ginobili, who obviously was one of the great six men of all time. And certainly for the Spurs was a huge part of the dynasty coming off the bench.
The other guy he's been compared to is Boris Diaw, who was a guy who certainly had a lot of success coming off the bench for San Antonio also. In his time there. But yeah, the other thing that stood out too, because I was at Victor's post-game press conference, I just continue to be very amused and amazed at the way he approaches the media and talks about both himself and just his overall confidence. He had a quote he got at the first question he got asked in the press conference was about Greg Popovich signing his extension. And what did you think of him signing the extension? Here's what he said. Of course, it's just another sign from him and from the franchise that they care about the project. There's something great going on that's starting, and we kind of knew it, meaning the extension, was going to happen, but now let's get it rolling. We can start now. Like he uses like Victor, I've been in a couple things with him now media-wise. Like he talks about himself like as the grand project, and like this is what we're doing.
He's not bashful at all.
Yeah, it is. It's amazing. Like it's almost more amazing to hear him talk like this than even to watch him play. Because I've said it before on the pod, he says these things, and they could easily come off as arrogant and seeming like kind of a jerk the way he talks. But when you listen to him, it never comes off that way. He's just like, oh yeah, this is what, you know, we're doing something great here. We're going to get started. It's going to be fun. Like, it's really fascinating. Like, especially in a second language, like the whole thing is just, he's a really, really impressive guy all the way around.
Yes. I think he's affable, right? Is that the word you just used? He's affable. Yes. And the way he says affable. You're right. And he does do that. And he's very confident. And so, by the way, is Chet Holmgren. Who doesn't do as much media and isn't as smooth, but is also very, very confident in himself. Mm-hmm. So I saw that our old friend, Michael C. Wright from NBA.com. I was thinking about his middle name, which is Corleone, which is one of the great names I've ever heard in my life.
It actually stands for country, because he is country. He is. Wichita Falls, Texas.
Proud Texan. Anyway, I don't know if this is common knowledge, but he's the one I saw say it, that Victor was invited to the Fanatics NBA Players Association party on Saturday night, but skipped it because he wanted to get extra sleep and rest before his game on Sunday. And that made me smile for two reasons. Number one, that, you know, I wrote the story, the first Wembanyama story I wrote about, the lead of the story was how him and his trainers really want him to get 10 to 12 hours of sleep a night. I doubt that's been happening recently, but so he's trying at least.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's the roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. The second thing is, because I know that Michael Rubin, who runs Fanatics, CEO of Fanatics, has been in the news recently because of his white party in the Hamptons. Mm. He had another party, this time in Vegas. Michael Rubin was at Victor Wembanyama's lottery party. Mm. You know, there was like I said, 60 people there. It was hard to get in. And Michael Rubin was there.
I'm not sure there's a room in the world that Michael Rubin can't get in if he doesn't want to at this point. Right.
So, yeah. But the reason he was there is I think he was signing Victor. I don't think it's been announced, but I think that's what was going on or was getting
certainly trying to.
Yeah. I kind of got the impression that he had, because he was sort of brought into the inner circle. Be that as it may, Victor still said no to his party, which I liked. I liked.
Well, you know who else probably liked that a whole lot? The poor Spurs security guard, the security chief, right? Because if there's there's another incident in Vegas and the guy's like, oops, I did it again.
Or we may have to stop this pod.
Even for you, that was bad. That's saying on. Something.
Come on. That was great.
Even for you.
I'm proud of myself.
he couldn't, his face.
It was of the moment.
Well, the IT department was here in Vegas this weekend, and McMahon was explaining how he showed so much restraint, and now he's proven he couldn't hold it any longer. So
she left.
The guardrails are gone. Supervision. That's right. The guardrails are gone. Just glad we're able to even do the pod. We were able to get him on the Wi-Fi.
She went home and she was elated that her favorite NBA player, actually second favorite NBA player, was on the flight.
Who was that?
Not saying.
I want to say
she loves this guy because he's handsome. So I ain't giving him. I'm not saying her favorite's Giannis. I'm not telling you her second.
Well, who would have been flying to Dallas? We should.
I'm not saying. You might be on the right track. Nice guy, but I ain't down with the wife route.
JJ Barea.
It ain't Jose Juan. It ain't mi amigo.
All right. So you guys have watched a bunch of games. What are some of the stuff from Summer League before we go on to some other business that you've seen over these first 3-4 days of Summer League?
Go ahead, Timmy.
So, you know, we've hit on Chet a lot because obviously I saw him in Salt Lake City Summer League. So I'll move on to the guy who was picked right after him last year. And you don't see number 3 overall picks who started 79 games playing in the next year's Summer League that often these days. But Jabari Smith is, we'll see how much longer he goes. But he has been playing out here. And, you know, I thought he had a great quote where he said something along the lines of, we were 22-60 last year. Like, you know, I need to play, I need to work, you know, that sort of a thing. And, you know, had a 30-point performance in the first game where he hit that buzzer beating three. To beat the, I believe it was the Blazers. Yeah, because both Scoot
and
Thompson both got hurt, which, you know, that's part of the bummers. We've had some high-profile rookies go down early. And then this last game, it was supposed to be Thompson versus Thompson, the battle of the Thompson twins, but Amen was out, and that obviously was a bummer. But then Jabari Smith Jr. put on a show. had 38 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists. He was basically playing point center, and he was, you know, down there banging with some dudes who are big, you know, athletic specimens in Jalen Duren and James Wiseman. But his 38 points, like, this dude was bringing the ball up the floor, making plays off the dribble, doing stuff I didn't know he had. And I don't think he had in his game last year. I think this guy has, you know, you're seeing the work that he's done since the Rockets season ended in April. I mean, he had a couple, like, really smooth, pretty off-dribble turnarounds, like the double team's coming, turn baseline away from it. A beautiful and-one finish where he beats Wiseman off the dribble and comes up and reverse layup on the other side. He hit a step back on Wiseman because there was some chirping going on. He hit a step back on Wiseman and did a whole bunch of barking. You know, the Pistons guys, you know, the players sit courtside as he's running by them. He had a whole lot of things to say. And he said, "I can't tell you what I said. If I was mic'd up, they would have had to bleep it," basically. But he said, "I'm pretty sure they'll remember when we play them this year." So, super impressed with Jabari Smith Jr. is one of the big.
He also likes to play center. He's one of these guys, you know. We talked about Victor not wanting to play center. Obviously, yeah. He's, you know, Şengün is going to be their center, but like Jabari likes to play center, doesn't shy away from those minutes.
Mm-hmm. And you know, also that gives them flexibility in their matchups. And like when they drafted him, he was considered a special defensive prospect, you know, a guy who would fill out physically, but like you said, could bang once he filled out, but very switchy, extremely long, you know, basically kind of the projection for him was Rashard Lewis with all defensive potential, right? So like kind of a catch and shoot 6'10 guy with all defensive potential. By the way, I think he's 6'11 now. I do think he grew an inch. Apparently, Alpi Şengün grew at least an inch, maybe two. And again, like just the stuff he was doing off the dribble today was pretty eye-opening as far as significant development coming off his rookie season.
Yeah, I mean, the
concepts, what have you seen?
The two guys that really stood out to me, it was from that Portland Houston game on Friday. It was Scoot Thompson and Amen Thompson, or Scoot Henderson and Amen Thompson. They were both awesome. And they were going at it the whole game, guarding each other until they both got hurt. Scoot hurt his shoulder in the third quarter, and then Amen sprained his ankle in the fourth. He's not going to play against Summer League. Scoot might. But if you watch that game, like if I'm Portland and Houston, I'm really fired up. I mean, Scoot got wherever he wanted on the court, was able to get in the lane.
He looked so comfortable.
Both of them did. That was the thing that really stood out to me about both of them. They both got wherever they wanted. Scoot, obviously, he's a big physical guy. Anybody who sees him walk around could see that. But he got into the lane, was able to kick out for shots. His jumper, he hasn't made a lot of shot. Like, obviously, he's not shooting 40% with the Ignite last year, but his percentages went up a bunch from his first year. His shot looks fine. Like, he doesn't have some kind of hitch or anything. It's a smooth release. I was talking to Garrett Temple about it, actually, yesterday. I saw him somewhere. Longtime NBA vet, and we were talking about those guys, and like he was saying the same thing, like Scoot's shot looks perfectly good. Like, I think he's got the potential to be a very good jump shooter once he gets going and sort of, you know, gets the reps in, and everything else about him is there. Like, he was making defensive plays, like I said, he was making plays on offense, kicking the ball around. He was everything as advertised, like we thought coming in. But maybe more impressive to me was Amen Thompson. I mean, I'm not watching Overtime Elite.
I don't know his game.
I knew his game because I obviously heard Jonathan Givony talk about him, and I read about him, and I knew what he could do in theory, which is a 6'7" playmaking guard, you know, big time athleticism. You go, oh man, that's quite a package, right? Then you watch him play, and he's the
more offensive of the two. Azur is the more defensive of the two. Is that correct?
Yeah, I would say he's the better ball handler. Azur has made
some beautiful passes.
Yeah, it's Amen, I would say, is more of the point guard, and Azur is more of a wing. Yeah. But watching him play, like, it reminded me of watching Lonzo Ball play, where like when you watch Lonzo at UCLA, he was always under control. Like, he'd be flinging the ball ahead, and they'd be playing fast paced and moving the ball around, but he always was making the right play and he never looked rushed. And that was the thing about Thompson that was so impressive in that game Friday. He's going back and forth with Scoot. They're guarding each other. They're going up and down. And he's just, he wasn't trying to like take over the game. If a guy was open, he would just make the simple pass to the wing. Like it was really, really impressive. And like, if I'm Houston coming out of this weekend with the way Jabari has played, with the way Thompson played on Friday, with the other young guys they've got, adding Fred VanVleet, like Houston's going to struggle next year. They're probably not going to be that close to a playoff spot given how tough the West is from a depth standpoint. But I think it's been a great weekend for the Rockets. And I think there's a lot for them to be excited about moving forward with this group. Cause I mean, it looks like they've got some real pieces to work with, and you know, it's going to be fun to see how they grow next season.
You know, the Thompson Twins athletic comp is Jaylen Brown. I mean, they have NBA bodies and explosive athleticism. Obviously, the big question for both of them is going to be the jump shot. I mean, we've seen a lot of guys, including Lonzo Ball, develop jump shots in the NBA. There will not be a single time their rookie season where somebody goes over a screen against them on a pick and roll. we can go ahead.
Certainly wouldn't think so.
We can go ahead and bank on that right now. But if they develop jump shots, like they've got a chance to be really, really good. Another rookie, and I only saw the fourth quarter of the Pacers Vegas opener, but it's pronounced Jairus, correct?
Jairus Walker, yep.
Jairus Walker, I was really, really impressed with him. And he looks like a pass rusher. 6'8", 249. And you immediately, just looking down on the floor, you see, my God, this guy's arms are long. 7'3" wingspan. And, you know, he's another guy like the comps, Draymond Green. Like, what is he offensively? More of a playmaker than a scorer. You know, this game, 8 points, 13 rebounds, 5 assists. And I saw 3 of the assists. They're all really pretty passes, like, you know, vision, just creating, not just like moving the ball, but like creating off the dribble and making a play for his teammate, you know, getting guys layups and dunks. You know, one of them was in the open floor, like for a guy that big, looked really explosive and athletic. I had a spectacular block shot that was like a big time clutch play in that game. I tell you, that Pacers team, you know, with Halliburton, with Mathurin, with this guy coming along, Miles
Brown.
I think that the Pacers team, I'm talking more like long term, they're starting they just got
Obi Toppin for next to nothing. I know Obi Toppin's been underwhelming, but he's a big time athlete.
Well, and you know what Obi Toppin might be really good at doing? Playing with a center and Miles Turner, who can space the floor and run and pick and roll with one of the best playmakers in the NBA, a guy named Tyrese Halliburton. Like, say whatever you think of him, the man can jump and catch a lob pass and throw it down. But like I said, Jairus Walker, I only saw a quarter, but right away I was like, I see why this guy was a, you know, mid lottery pick for sure.
Yeah.
They were pleased that he was there for him. It was hard for them to, they were at 7, I believe. It was hard for them to predict
and they,
what
they,
was going to be there.
Yeah, they were able to actually move down. I forget what they got in the deal. They moved down to 8, but certainly part of that is the Wizards were calling. It was like, who are you picking? Okay, not our guy. Fine, we'll make this deal.
Yeah, got a couple seconds. The Wizards went up and got Bilal Coulibaly, and they got Walker. The other thing to say, too, is pretty rough week for Brandon Miller. Combined 9 for 32 from the field in the two games here. Was not much better in Sacramento. Yeah. Look, like I said about Victor before the games this weekend, I'm not reading a ton into rookies at Summer League, but it's going to be very interesting to watch the development of him going forward, and Scoot Henderson in particular, but also Amen Thompson. And like, you watch those three guys play this week, and while Brandon Miller is intriguing and he certainly has a lot of upside, I would feel better about those other two guys. And you know, it'll be interesting to see what that looks like. Look, Charlotte's team is a mess. The roster isn't very like, it's not a great situation overall probably for him, but it's something to monitor going forward, I would say.
Well, look, I've said before, he's a prototypical modern NBA player. His size can shoot. Not maybe not this week, but he can shoot. The decision that Charlotte had in front of them was potentially monumental.
Yeah.
We'll see how it plays out. I don't know how it's going to play out. I'm not pretending to know how it's going to play out, but the decision was monumental in my view, choosing between those two players. And that's not my opinion. Based on my evaluation of players, that's what people were, who I trust, were telling me, mm-hmm. is that they were saying they would have had a hell of a time in that spot choosing, and that they would have been hard for them not to take Scoot. We'll see. Might end up being a brilliant move. Mitch Kupchak has built championship teams before. I'm not second guessing. I'm just saying is big. Speaking of deals and moves, over the last few days, as the moratorium has lifted, the signings and trades have come in, and it's been an opportunity to get a look at the details. And so I went through all the contracts that have.
I love how different the details are than what sources say.
That's true. Some of them in either direction, by the way.
Do you mind if I start with one you don't have written down there? I think, Brian,
go on.
I want to ask McMahon, how did Dylan Brooks get this extra money?
Okay, well, hold on. I do have it written down here.
Oh, it is now. So, I didn't think
that's probably the first one on this list. What do you think?
I didn't think it was. I didn't think it was. I didn't think it was out yet. So I apologize. Right,
this is where I was going to start. So let me just say this. So first off, hat tip to Bobby Marks, who collects this data for us, and it's incredibly valuable.
Bobby is.
We have some very interesting things in here, including some contracts that's guarantees are a lot less than. Significantly less than what they're
a chunk of change less for sure.
I'll take the contracts.
I'd take just the incentives on these deals. The ones that are
you ain't lying.
Dylan Brooks can give the middle finger to anybody, at least until the start of the season, because he got over on everybody. No matter what anybody wants to say, no matter what anybody that played against him. Or whatever.
Yeah.
And you can judge whatever he's got. Dudes, he got. So when it, let me just say, the contracts that the Rockets signed, Jeff Green, according to the paperwork, I find this stunning, but this is what the paperwork from the NBA says. 2 years, $16 million, $0 guaranteed. Zero. It says it's non. I almost think that's a typo. So I'm just going to put that.
Yeah,
but
that's interesting.
The paperwork says $0 guaranteed. Jock Landale. Rockets, 4 years, $32 million, only the first year guaranteed. Fred VanVleet, probably the biggest name free agent to switch teams, 3 years, $129 million at the max, right? Third year team option.
Mm-hmm.
So only two and like 84 guaranteed.
That's it.
Okay. Third year team option. It's a little more than that, but third year team option. We talked on this pod about Kevin Porter only getting 1 year guaranteed, and that the Rockets were obviously have a strategy about the way they're signing contracts. So when I heard Dylan Brooks 4 years, $80 million, and I know that there were reports out there that it was fully guaranteed, that's fine. I wanted to see the numbers.
Yeah.
Not only is that sucker fully guaranteed.
Not only is the 80 fully guaranteed, but.
It's $86 million. 86
plus another $4 million in incentives.
That's right. But I'm only going to talk about the guaranteed money. 4 years, $86 million. And they built it descending. So it starts at the highest number and then goes down. So this first year, it's like $24 million or something. Holy mackerel. Dylan Brooks, take that world.
Boy.
And the Rockets, I don't know who the Rockets were bidding against to give this offer. Maybe there was somebody out there, but that to me is I'm still waiting to see. Jeremy Grant just signed his contract today with the Blazers. We and the ESPN don't have the data yet. I'm interested to see what that number comes in at in terms of the guarantee. Maybe it'll all be guaranteed. Maybe it'll come in at $175 million. I just got to say, like, wow, on Dylan Brooks.
And, yeah, you know,
the Rockets have. I've been doing this stuff, and this is against the grain.
Yeah, and you know the thing you heard about Dylan Brooks from people during and after that playoff series against the Lakers is, man, he really cost himself a lot of money. Like he's probably gonna have to settle for mid-level, like full mid-level, 12.4 mil, 4 years, what is 53, 54. That sort of a deal was what was expected for Dylan Brooks, and he blew that out of the water. Man. And I don't know what other suitors he had. I don't know if there was another cap space team that wanted him, would have made a play for him. It seems like a really high number.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. All right. By the way, the trade that got Dylan Brooks to Houston ended up being a 5-team trade. And so this is rare to see this. There were 6 players in that trade. Patty Mills was in the trade. KJ Martin was in the trade. There were 6 players. Garuba.
It was Mangora. Two former first-round picks. I'm sorry, 3 former recent first-round picks. First-rounders on rookie deals from the Rockets. Usman Garuba, Ty Washington Jr. going to Atlanta. I believe they ended up getting rerouted.
To Oklahoma City.
Yeah. And then Josh Christopher going to Memphis. So 3 first round picks. Also, I love these deals where there's the draft rights of 2 players in this deal, both of whom happen to be the last pick, like the Mr. Irrelevant of their drafts. 2017 Mr. Irrelevant, Alpha Kaba, KBA, went from Atlanta to Houston. In 2019, Mr. Irrelevant, the Clippers sent to Memphis Vanya Mirinkovic, and I'm efforting on the pronunciation, not 100% certain. I was not aware either of those gentlemen existed before I read this thing.
Yeah, we don't need to break the trade down anymore, but let me just say it was Oklahoma City, Clippers, Hawks, Grizzlies, and Rockets. 6 players, 2 draft right players, 6 second round picks, a Mo Harkless trade exception was in there, and $1.1 million in cash went from Oklahoma City to Atlanta in the deal. All right, so let me go over.
I like the Clippers coming out of that thing with Kenyon Martin Jr.
Me too.
I think that's an interesting one. I'd put him kind of in the Obi Toppin Jr. Oh, wait, Obi Toppin's not a junior, is he?
No, he's not. Oh,
sorry. I'm getting my juniors confused. I put him kind of in the Obi Toppin category of, hey, you know that man can run, jump, and finish.
He's also got a lot more defensive chops than Obi. I really like KJ a lot. I thought that was a really slick move by the Clippers to get a low cost athletic guy like that on a team that needs some youth and athleticism. I really like that a lot.
Yeah.
I was also surprised that Fred VanVleet's 3rd year was a team option. Okay, so I want to go over real quick. We have seen in the past that when rookies sign max contract extensions, if they get a player option, more often than not, it means that that guy ain't staying.
Yes.
And so I'm going to tell you that
Paul George, Edwards, Anthony Davis, and Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah. Although I think Jason Tatum got a player option, and I would be surprised if he leaves. But just
so does Luka Doncic.
Interesting. I wasn't aware of that. All right, Anthony Davis. I'm sorry, Anthony Edwards, LaMelo Ball, Desmond Bane, Tyrese Halliburton, all of them, no options. full 5 years, no options in their contracts. Bane's guarantee is the lowest of those. Am I forgetting a max extension guy?
Nope.
Okay. Bane's guarantee is the lowest of those. 197 guarantee, but he's got incentives that can knock it up. The rest of those guys all guaranteed at 105 or 205 million.
And I think the rest of those guys all have supermax potential in their deals, correct?
I think so, but I don't have that data right in front of
me.
Also, Domantas Sabonis, he signed that contract extension. His contract now is 5 years, 203 million. No options in that deal. He also has 13 million in incentives in that deal. I don't know what the incentives are. One of the other things we heard about Kyrie Irving signing a 3 year, $126 million deal. It's actually $120 million guaranteed. And he has $6 million in bonuses. And here are the bonuses that he has each $2 million per year.
Yeah, $1 million each.
$1 million each. And they're tied to games played, which is not a surprise, right? Mm-hmm. So in each year, he gets $1 million if he plays 65 games or more, which is the NBA's threshold for awards. And he gets another $1 million if he plays 58 games and the team wins 50 games or more.
Yeah.
So I don't know if he cares. He's not shown that letting a little bit of money go here and there is a deterrent to him. So, but the Mavericks did build in a modicum of incentives. Mm-hmm.
We would have asked Kyrie about that, but he didn't want to do media. He did show up to the game. Didn't want to do media. It informed through a PR staffer. They just wanted to focus on being with the guys, which is his right. Didn't hear from an exit interviews either, but clearly he's excited about being back in Dallas. I did get in a little bit of hot water with some Mavs fans / Kyrie crazies over this this thing, because I tweeted out those details you just read, and I said these are officially considered unlikely bonuses, unlikely incentives. And then I had a little moment of like, wait, let me double check this. So I just deleted the tweet and deleted that phrase and just put it back up with just the incentives and be, oh, we saw the first week. Okay, cool. And then I put back an explainer. I once said triple check that they're unlikely. People got mad that I'm like hating. It's like, stupid idiots. Unlikely incentives is the actual term, and it's based on what's happened in the prior season. And Kyrie hadn't played 65 games, not just the prior season, but I believe it's the prior four seasons. And obviously the Mavericks didn't win 50 games last year.
Everything you said is accurate. Chris Middleton's contract with the Bucks, 3 years, $93 million. The last year is a player option, not a team option. A lot of guys got player options this year. But, you know, Middleton getting a player option in there is, you know, a win for him. He can be a free agent again in 2 years. So Giannis has 2 years left on his contract. I suspect that maybe that was part of it, but I'm not. Who am I? I don't know. So I want to talk real quick about the contracts that Kyle Kuzma and Cameron Johnson signed with Washington and Brooklyn, respectively. They both got the same guarantee, 4 years, $90 million. Now, I know Kuzma's was reported as 101, 102.
Two, I think, yeah.
He has $12 million in incentive bonuses that he can hit. Maybe he'll hit all of them, but it's $90 million guaranteed over four. Mm-hmm. No options in his contract. No player or team options. And then Cam Johnson, also 4 and 90. He's got more incentives. He's got $18 million in incentives, which is a big number over the course of 4 years. And also no options in his deal. So both of them basically got the same deal, 4 and 90 plus incentives. Mm-hmm. Speaking of player options, we talked a minute ago, D'Angelo Russell with the Lakers was reported as it's 2 years and $36 million. The second year is a player option. He can be a free agent next summer. Same for Joe Ingles with the Magic, 2 years, $22 million. Oh, I'm sorry. Take that back. Second year team option.
I was going to say
for Ingles. Sorry. Team option. Also second year team option, Bruce Brown, 2 years, $25 million. Second year, team
45 million.
I'm sorry, 45 million.
Yeah.
Gosh, thank you for checking.
That's slight, because 2 years, 25, he wasn't signing, because he was, if that was the case, he'd have gone full mid level for 4 years for a number of teams, including the Mavericks, that would have eagerly giving them
that. Jakob Poeltl with the Raptors, 4 years, $78 million guaranteed. There's some incentives in there, but $78 million guaranteed. The last year, player option. Austin Reeves with the Lakers, 4 years, $54 million. Fourth year, player option.
By the way, I was talking to somebody in a front office, and they said basically, man, we did give him that. We thought that guy was worth $100 million over 4 years, you know. But as far as like putting an offer sheet on the table, number one, they couldn't have gone that high anyways. But just felt like it's a waste of time because the Lakers will match anything. So teams feeling like the Lakers would match anything ended up saving the Lakers. What was the number of the team you could have poisoned?
I thought it was in the 80s. I thought they could.
Yeah. So they saved, we'll call it $30-ish million.
Do you agree? Bontemps said Austin Reeves, if he was an unrestricted free agent, could have gotten $100 million over.
Yes.
4 years.
Listen, I think he could have at least gotten the Cam Johnson, Kyle Kuzma.
I agree with that.
So I think he might have gotten more than those guys. He's a ball handling. He's a ball handling wing who can guard a little bit. Like that's a more valuable player. It's a more valuable player than those guys. He's younger than those guys. I think he would have got a very big number.
And just to be clear, the Lakers paid him every dime they could have paid him. This was the max the Lakers could have given.
And every little bell and whistle that they could have put in there to make it as attractive as possible, you know, player option, trade kicker, blah, blah, blah.
Russell Westbrook, 2 years, $8 million, second year player option with the Clippers. One of the more interesting deals, Jordan Clarkson signed a 3 year, $51 million extension where they sort of renegotiated and extended. He makes $23 million in the upcoming season. And then it drops to $14 million the following 2 years.
Yeah.
So and built so backwards.
They had discussed different structures, and that all along was the most likely. One reason that it's interesting that that is the structure that they went ahead and went forward with is because I believe that uses up pretty much all, if not all, of the Jazz's remaining cap space, so they can't make a trade, for example, that they would be taking back significantly more money than they're giving, you know, just in case they were to get in the mix for like a superstar point guard who played college basketball in that state, that sort of a thing.
Yeah, it sounds like the Jazz, they kicked the tires on that, but they're very much, you know, watching from the sidelines.
I would say if it is got to blow the heat out of the water on a deal, the Jazz will not be doing that. If it's, hey, wow, we can get them for that, then they would.
Draymond Green, 4 years, $100 million to the penny.
Let me rephrase. I would say they would consider doing it at a price that would be less than you would anticipate. So I'm trying to avoid aggregation.
I understand. I would just say if the price on Dame Lillard came down, I think a lot of teams might be interested, not just the Jazz, if you know, but anyway. Or I shouldn't say a lot, but more teams would be interested. Draymond Green, 4 years, $100 million to the penny, fourth year player option, aligns his contract. I mean, Steph has 3 years left. He could, you know, Draymond could opt out. I doubt he's opting out of that fourth year, but who knows? Wiggins has 3 years left and then has an opt out. So it's sort of aligned there. I think that was my notes. The other thing I'm going to say is the details on the trade that from the Warriors that they made to acquire Chris Paul with Jordan Poole in that deal. The first round pick that the Warriors sent to the Wizards, 2030 first round pick, is top 20 protected for the first year and then goes to 2 seconds. So a reasonably heavily protected in for 1 year first round pick. And that would not be what you would call a quote unquote good first. Although who knows what the lay of the land will be in 2030, but the best it could be is 21. And if the Warriors are a non playoff team or whatever play in team, whatever we're doing in 2030, then they wouldn't get a first at all. So, I think those are my notes. Did you guys notice anything else that you wanted to bring up?
You did a great job of covering it.
Bontemps had nothing to say on any of it.
Thanks, Bontemps.
I mean, it was just
actually that's
just listening to a lot of reading of numbers. So there
that's
we
a
go.
That's a pleasant reprieve. You got any more you want to talk about if it shuts Bontemps up?
Well, before we go, since we're just talking about the Warriors, Chris Paul had his introductory press conference with the Warriors today in Las Vegas. I know that it's not exactly surprising and hardly rare for someone to say this, but it looked very awkward to have him holding up a Warriors jersey with number 3 on it. Just, it didn't even look right. Mm-hmm. He was standing in front of a UNLV backdrop. And, you know, in my head, I think of him as a Rocket, even more than as a Sun. He's a Rocket as I think of him. And him holding up that, it just, with the red background and him holding that jersey up in front of it, which, you know, didn't match, like it only accentuated the awkwardness of what it looked like, which he acknowledged. He acknowledged that this was weird that he said that. Bontemps, what did you take away from some of the stuff that he said?
I mean, you know, I don't really care that he's, you know, talking around the idea of, oh, I haven't talked to Steve about not starting yet. I mean, Chris has started, I think, every game of his career, basically. I'm sure he's not, knowing Chris, I'm sure he's not going to be ready to just announce he's going to be coming off the bench. He's going to be coming off the bench. I don't really see any way that he would be in their starting lineup, nor should he be. And, you know, I mean, it, like we've talked about, if Chris Paul can play 20 minutes a game for them and give them a theory of an offense with Steph Curry's off the court, which they've never had, I think it could be a successful thing. I think if he's having to play more minutes than that, he's probably going to break down. Won't be that helpful. And the other thing too is they have optionality now to use that contract in a big trade to go get other pieces, to go get multiple pieces, to go get one big time player down the road if they want. And that's what I'm curious to see what happens with Golden State between now and the trade deadline. Is Chris Paul actually on the team in March? Because, you know, having a giant expiring contract sitting there with some trade ammo, it makes you wonder if that's the direction they end up choosing to go in. But, you know, he's winning his bottom, whatever he's gone, and he's got a chance to fill a role that Golden State hasn't been able to fill this whole run with Curry. And if he can, they got a chance to win a lot of games, but whether he wants to say it now or not, it's going to be coming off the bench.
I care about that. And maybe it's nothing, but so our colleague Kendra Andrews, my favorite Andrews sister, asked Chris Paul a question that, you know, kind of presuming that he would be coming off the bench. And CP3 said, you coaching?
Yeah, she asked, like, what do you think about Jonathan Kuminga? What do you think about
The second unit that you'll probably be playing with a lot, something like that. You coaching? And then, you know, there's a follow-up question, and basically that's when he said, you know, we haven't talked about it. It's not like it's just one of those things where it's like you bring that up right away. And it's like, okay, listen, you understand the franchise that you're joining, right? You understand that 2 years ago, this starting lineup won a championship, right? You understand that this starting backcourt has won multiple championships together, right? You understand that last year, disappointing as it was for the Warriors, their starting five had a net rating of plus 21.9, by far the best in the league of any lineup that had played that many minutes together. So, of course, you're coming off the bench. So I just think for, you know, there's going to be so much questions about, or, you know, discussion about, hey, you know, how's it fit? How's CP3 fitting just from a kind of an ego perspective? You know, him and Steph, they had a rivalry. Draymond had said, you know, he couldn't stand Chris Paul on a podcast a few years back. How's all that going? So CP3 understands how narratives go. He had a chance to set the narrative today and he basically punted on it, which I don't understand.
Well,
why couldn't Chris Paul say, hey, I've started every single game in my career, and for the first time ever, it makes sense for me to come off the bench and I'm going to embrace this six-man role. They've got a great starting lineup. You know, there's going to be some adjustments that I'm going to need to make, but trust me, I'm going to succeed in this six-man role and do everything I can to help this championship franchise hang another banner. Why couldn't he establish that narrative? I thought it was weird.
Because he's started 1,363 regular season playoff games out of 1,363 games played. And I don't think Chris Paul was ready to give that a win to the media in July, because that's how Chris
is. Why is that a win? Who cares? Why is
that? I'm not saying I agree with you. I would have done that, but it did not surprise me that Chris Paul sat there and said, I don't know what you're talking about. Why would you think I'm coming off the bench? Like,
you know, I'll say this. Chris Paul has pissed off a lot of teammates over the years. And I think that the vast majority of instances, and maybe all of them, was because he was right and relentless, because he is a truth teller and a truth shouter. He needs to be a truth teller to himself and understand, I've got to be coming off the bench. It's best for the team. And at 38 years old with significant durability issues, getting my minutes down to the low 20s is definitely best for me as well. He's got to tell himself the truth. He's great at telling other people the truth. Maybe not the delivery, but
he also knows the truth. He knows the truth. But it could have been worse. He could have said, who, me?
Yes. Shout out Carmelo Anthony. Banana boat.
He genuinely was surprised that he was being asked the question in the moment. I believe that was an authentic reaction.
Hey, yo, P, they want me to come off the bench.
Oh, man. All right. Well, good podcast for second week of July with not much going on in the NBA. So, all right. Thank you to Jackson, our producer. Thank you to Tim 1 and Tim 2.
Oh, wow. And, how's that feel, Von Timps? How's it feel to be Tim Deuce?
Didn't say which was which. I also stand by the fact that it would have been a hell of a lot better to do that than listen to you guys go back and forth for 10 minutes about the different pronunciations of the Jalen Williamses. But
well, those YouTube comments, I was scrolling through looking for the unanimous support for our early December live pod here in Las Vegas. They also they ripped you on that one as well. So, you know, that was,
I don't read the comments.
Not quite as harshly as the rice cake one, but they got after you.
What else is new?
Thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective Podcast.
Adios, amigos.